And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I'm so sorry. I think I dropped the ball on the shingles vaccine. here, I just looked it up right here. I just did this 2 seconds ago. I typed in the question on my phone. I said, can shingles vaccine cause a shorter lifespan? It doesn't matter really what question I ask. If you pose a question to Google and it has a negative connotation, you can start coming up with all sorts of stuff. So anyway, I clicked on this one, and it says, what is the controversy with the shingles shot or the shingles vaccine? And lo and behold, July 2nd, 2024, there's an article written called The Shingles Vaccine Controversy, and it was published by ChoiceConnectionsVA.com. I don't know what that is, and I didn't look the article up. But what they're showing is that when somebody gets a vaccine, lo and behold, they have a much higher risk of developing a much worse case of shingles, an outbreak, the very thing the vaccine is supposed to protect against. And so doesn't that just make you question or wonder, why would I take something if it has the risk of giving me a worse case of shingles? And if I'm not mistaken, it's been pulled from the market just for precautionary reasons. Folks, they don't pull drugs from the market or vaccines for no reason. Okay, here's another one right here. I looked up the Food and Drug Administration on their website. They're saying, whoa, 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 pump the brakes, hold on. Don't go too fast here. They're saying this shingles vaccine called Shingrix, you got to start telling people that if they take this shot, they have a much higher risk of developing what's called Guillain-Barré or Gillian. I call it Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's almost a pretty good autoimmune disease of the nervous system. Not good. I remember one of the Dallas Cowboy players recently, I think his name was Frederick, had Guillain-Barré following probably a vaccine. Who knows? But he had to end his career. How would you like to be so exhausted that you can't move or lift a weight? The last time I checked, a center for the Dallas Cowboys probably has to be one strong, buff, powerful dude. Exactly. Well, you can't. And so the Food and Drug Administration is now requiring a warning that if you take this shot, you might develop an autoimmune disease of your immune system in your life. Is going to be forever different because of it. And even if you heal after 4 or 5 years, you're not the same. You've lost 4 or 5 years of your life. Now, I kind of go through this day in, day out when people tell me about the bad things that happened to them. I ask them, did they give you full disclosure and say this is going to be one of the side effects? And it's always no. That doesn't happen. What is the other one? Oh, I can't find it. I just had it right here. Anyway, it was that's not going to do any good. Anyway, some of those shingles vaccines have actually been pulled from the market because of all the horrific side effects. I don't know. how do y'all deal with reality? You know, just because I say something doesn't mean it's true, right? Would you say the phrase that actions speak louder than words? Yeah. If I ask you how you judge somebody, do you judge a person based on what they say, or do you just judge them by what they do? See, what you have is, if a person tells you something all glowing and good, positive, it sounds too good to be true. Well, it probably is. But then the result is, you have a horrible side effect, a problem from it. You never would have had it if you hadn't participated. But the person gave you such a glowing report. Doesn't that just kind of make you wonder? Okay, I was very ill-prepared for that. But anyway, let me talk about this for a second. Okay, now this I want you to take seriously. Would you believe me if I told you that probably 98% of all health problems could probably easily be avoided? When I say avoided, I mean, you don't have to suffer if you're willing to do what it takes to keep your body in good working order. Now, this is not meant to be negative. But if a person chooses a lifestyle, and let me just kind of paint a picture for you. A relative was telling me about a 21-year-old that wants to retire. They don't want to work. They want somebody else to pay their bills so they can sit on the couch and watch television and eat processed food or junk food. Well, how's that going to go? Are you going to be shocked if they develop diabetes? No. Are you going to be totally shocked if they don't suffer from horrific anxiety and depression because of their unhealthy lifestyle? Well, no. Are you going to be shocked if they have a heart attack when they're 38 years old? No, you're not. All that's preventable if you're willing to take care of yourself. Now, the truth of it is, if you look at the studies on the number of people out of 100 that choose to take really good care of themselves and do what it takes to keep their body in good working order, well, guess what that is? It's usually around 3%. There's probably 2% that kind of, you know, do pretty good, but not as good as the 3%. But that means that the vast majority of the population, they don't really make a concerted effort. They don't have a plan to take care of themselves. And so one of the things that I like to do here is I really want to encourage you. Do you realize how difficult and hard it is? I'm thinking of, I'm going to just say three people that I know. Two of them are women. One of them is a man. I know them personally. And I'm going to say it's obvious that they have literally lost so much of their muscle mass and so much of their strength that just to watch them get out of a chair, it's almost painful. Now, I'm not trying to be critical, but do you think that maybe 20 years ago that maybe they could have developed a habit of or just come into terms with, I've got to eat good high-quality protein if I'm going to keep my muscles in good working order? I mean, the writing is on the wall. As a human being ages, you're actually going to lose some of your strength. I don't have all the numbers memorized, but it's just the way it is. The moment you're born, your body kind of starts this downward decline. I know that doesn't seem logical, but just kind of play along with me. But all these changes start to take place. If you don't run and play outdoors when you're a child and climb over fences and hop on the back of horses without a saddle or climb over a fence or climb trees or jump over creeks and climb up the side of rivers and swim in the lake, well, you're not going to be strong enough. That's one of the beautiful things about being a child. The muscles that you develop as a child, they are going to carry you the rest of your life. So by the time a person is 60, and yes, it has been shown, a new study from Stanford University, the body goes through this incredible, They found in this one study from Stanford that there are two times in a human being's life where they age rapidly. And so the first one's at 44. So however you would like to interpret this, if they say that there is a change that takes place where you start wearing out faster, you're more prone to disease, you're on the downhill slide, things don't work as good as they used to, you tend to encounter more diseases. If I say 44 is that age, maybe a person listening that's 40 years old says, you know what, maybe I should start to eat a little bit better. Maybe there's some things that I should avoid. Maybe I can move my body more. How about if I exercise a little bit every day, just enough to keep my body in good working order? Is that worth it? Is that a good investment to keep my body working good enough so I can do all the things that God has given me the task of doing? That'd be one way of looking at it. And so, but if you don't do that, the second time that the human organism goes through this tremendous aging effect or decline is age 60. I kind of thought about that. I don't know why the number 60, but anyway, what do you think about that? What do you think about a person that you've seen before in your life? They've gone from 50, where they're in great shape, but all of a sudden now they're 60, things don't work the same. There is a tremendous drop-off in the level of their physical activity. Maybe they want to sit. You know, the mind is a powerful thing. is the mind supposed to be the general that tells your body what to do? Or do we try to make the body comfortable all the time? Well, that's what it's saying. Unless you have some type of a plan to keep your body in great working order, 44 is going to get here, and then 60, and you're going to take two really, really big hits where all of a sudden it's going to become so much harder. I'm just encouraging you to get ahead of the curve. Do you really need somebody to tell you that you're not in good working order? You know, I know there's some people that are delusional. They think they're the epitome of health, and they could barely even move. It's horrible. So if you'd like to join me on the program this morning, this program is called Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan. The number here at the station is 903-589-8507. It is so easy to be involved with all the busy activities of life where you put yourself on the back burner and you give everything you have to everybody else. I mean, I understand that. I've done that. I have worked so long providing and taking care of other people that you have to look in the mirror and say, you know what, you've got to draw a boundary line here. You've got to take some care of yourself if you're going to be able to function at a higher level. And so let's cover some research this morning. Hang on, we've got a call, and I guarantee you that's so much more important. Good morning, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I was calling here.
You'll have to turn the radio off. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Here a while back, you had said something about something you could take for your legs, where they're weak. And I have a brother that his legs are weak. He's still walking, but they're weak. And I was just wanting to know what that.
Well, the conversation that I had with a person this week, we went to my trusty laptop computer and I typed in, can statin drugs, or what I'm referring to is cholesterol-lowering drugs, can they make the legs hurt and weak? And, of course, if you type that in the computer, what do you think the computer is going to answer with? It's going to have some studies. And the studies demonstrate that in a lot of people, when they take cholesterol-lowering drugs, it makes their legs so weak they don't even want to get up because they hurt all the time. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But I think what I was probably referring to, and I have two things in mind. If I wanted to go from being weak in the legs to being strong to where you could actually grow some muscle, well, technically, there's only two things that can be done. You have to do both of them. The first one's pretty simple and pretty easy. If a person makes a concerted effort to actually eat more protein, and by eating more protein, you don't really leave room for like crackers and potato chips and donuts and Cokes. But when you eat protein, that's actually what the building block of muscles are. You make it easy for the body. And then the next thing, it's called resistance, or if you want to call it strength training, or like you said, walking. A man was telling me a story this week that he walks 0.9 miles down a hill at about a 30-degree grade, and he walks 0.9 miles at a brisk pace up that 30-degree grade. So you tell me, would that make the legs stronger, or would walking around a nice, flat, comfortable mall floor, would that be harder on the body? Walking uphill, and you know what? Humans, we're built to walk uphill, aren't we? And so, but I think what I was referring to is, I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I think the caller was saying they had horrible leg cramps. And I think I said, okay, there's a product that I have used that is very, very good at supplying organic plant-based magnesium to the cells or the muscles of the leg. It's called Easy Mag. Mm. Now, if it were me and I wanted to have stronger legs, I would eat more protein than what I was comfortable eating. So if your brother is normally eating 2 eggs for breakfast, well, I'd try to shovel closer to 4 his direction.
Well, he does eat lots of eggs, so because he likes them.
You know what the two forms of protein that definitely make you stronger? Red meat and chicken. I mean, red meat and fish is what I wanted to say.
Well, does
he like to eat fish?
Yes.
You've got to put stress on the legs to make them adapt and grow new muscles. I know you've heard me talk about this before, but I've seen it work over and over again. People that walk barefoot sometime throughout the day, if they can, I'm not telling a person to walk on broken glass or, you know, hard rocks on the road or, you know, anything that's dangerous, grass burrs, fire ants. But when you walk barefoot, you're using so many more muscles of your feet and your legs. You're activating them. But study after study shows that people that walk barefoot, as opposed to people that walk with shoes on, they literally have twice as many blood vessels in their feet and twice as many nerves. Now, what that translates to is people that walk barefoot, they never get plantar fasciitis. Their feet never hurt. And they never have neuropathy. People that want to be super comfortable, they have neuropathy.
Well, he's about 89.
About 89. So, well, that's great.
And he does walk, but he's, his legs does hurt him. So that's kind of normal when you get that age. Where your legs to kind of hurt, but I just thought there was, you had said something about some kind of something that you get at the health food store.
Well, magnesium and cod liver oil would be a very, very good start.
Okay.
I had a lady the other day she was telling me her legs hurt all the time, they ache at night. Now, and I realize this may not be what everybody wants to hear, but it's just the truth of it. So when I asked her for a follow-up visit, how do your legs feel now? She said, no more pain. They feel the best they felt in years. And I said, well, did it work? And she said, yes. You know what she did? Yeah. She cut out sugar.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't even tell you how many people that the pain just sort of magically disappears from their neck and their back and their legs when they don't eat sugar. I feel so sorry for places like Starbucks and McDonald's going out of business. I'm sorry, I'm having a moment. Let's talk about that for a second. What are they gonna do if they don't sell high fructose corn syrup to everybody? Man, okay, I'm really not that worried about them. Actually, they should go out of business. They really should. Mm-hmm.
Magnesium and what was the other one?
Fish oil.
Fish oil.
Yes, ma'am.
And I can get that all at the...
Mm-hmm. Absolutely you can. Okay. Does he live close by, or are you going to have to put a care package together for him?
No, he lives pretty close.
If he started wearing shorts and sunbathing his legs and walking barefoot and eating protein every meal, we could turn all this around. Dump the sugar and start living.
What about short pants?
What about short pants?
I said, I doubt that he would wear short pants.
Well, okay. Then can he walk barefoot? Can he roll the pants legs up so he can walk barefoot?
I don't know. I could ask him.
Is he that guy that I saw in Tyler wearing skinny jeans the other day?
No.
I didn't think so. Well, you tell him I'm really rooting for him. I want him to get his strength back, but he's going to have to put some work into it.
Yeah. Well... He goes and takes care of a person. So
he's got motivation. I like this guy.
Yes. Well.
Hey, I wonder if he would get a recumbent bicycle and start pedaling that for leg strength.
I don't think so.
I wonder if we got a shock collar from PetSmart and put. Never mind. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, I hope that helps.
He's a wonderful person. He's my brother, and I love him very much.
Well, you sure do, and you're such a great sister to him. God bless you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for your advice.
You're welcome. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you know what? That's okay if he didn't want to eat protein or give up sugar or exercise. That's fine, isn't it? Isn't that true? You have to let a person do what they want to do. Now, what's not fair is when a patient's not willing to, you know, come to reality and face the music. But you have to. If you would like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-589-8507. There is a phone line open. How do I know that? I'm looking right at the control board right now. And I've been talking for 21 minutes, so I know that also. This clock is like, it's like an atomic clock, I think. It's just like right on the money all the time. I can follow it exactly to the second. One of the things that popped in my head as I was visiting with that sweet lady on the phone was there was a study, and this is probably 20 or 30 years old, something like that, but they went to a nursing home facility, and they only looked at people in this nursing home that were bound to a wheelchair. That means they couldn't, when the dinner bell would ring, they could not walk down at a brisk stride. They couldn't do it. They had to wheel themselves down. They were just so physically weak. And lo and behold, somebody had this crazy idea. What would happen if we put relatively light but challenging dumbbells in their hands? And they probably had a physical therapist guide them through an upper body weightlifting routine. You know, and I don't know how you feel about this, but if you had to choose one exercise that is so good for the body, it would have to be an overhead press. And so just use your imagination. Somebody's sitting up straight in their wheelchair, and they hold the dumbbells right there at the shoulders, and all they do is they push up as high as they can. I'm kind of imitating that with myself right now. But there's a lot of muscles in the body that you have to use in order to complete the task of pressing your arm above your head. Now let me ask you a question. Do you want to be in a situation where you can no longer raise your arm, you know, above your head? Well, no. Anybody here want to have a rotator cuff that becomes weak and fragile and torn? You know, without pointing the finger to any one individual person, what is going to happen if you rely on aspirin, ibuprofen, Advil, Aleve, Naprosyn, Tylenol 3? Well, all you're going to do is cause your tendons to dissolve and they're going to tear and break, which requires a surgery. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. You were starting to talk about rotator cuff, and it's just exactly what I wanted to ask you. I am fixing to go for rotator cuff surgery, but also for a 3 centimeter, millimeter tear. I guess it's centimeter, which is bigger.
Centimeter is really big.
Okay.
It's like a little over an inch.
Okay, it's a 3.5 centimeter tear in my back. And I have full use of my shoulders from working on the farm. You know, I can move them every way. They will get glitched, and I'll just almost could go down, you know, when
now,
I get
where,
that.
Where is it torn again?
I have a back tear along my muscle and then a tear inside the rotator cuff.
Do you know which muscle it is? Is it like the teres minor, the teres major? Infraspinatus,
no,
supraspinatus?
Yes, supraspinatus.
Supraspinatus, okay.
Yeah, and I could text you the with the doctor. You know, I have that paperwork. Anyway, but I'm having second thoughts. Only because of the way the world is today. And I'm going like, you know, should I do this and get this over with? Should I wait?
You know, you're assuming that everything is going to go really well. No, that was actually a serious comment. I can't even tell you how many people I've talked to that have gone for rotator cuff tear surgery, and they never really, they always told me the same story. Wish I'd never done it. Now, anyway, I can't possibly know your situation, but are they saying the rotator cuff tendon is completely torn in half and it's not attached?
No, it must be attached because I have full use of my arm.
Yeah, okay, so then What's wrong with the idea of focusing on what can I do to build strength to the muscle and tendon? So, I mean, that's really all you've got at this point, if it's attached. Why don't you focus on routines that actually cause your body to grow new tendons?
That will happen, because I've talked to three doctors, and they've all said once that tear is there, it will never repair itself.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Because the way the type of tear is.
All right, let me ask you a question. Have you taken that information, and have you gone to the internet and said, are there any studies that demonstrate that tendons can repair themselves?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to see what I come up with.
And I'm going to pull up, as we're seeing, Matt, what it says.
Obviously, I can't multitask. Oh, great. Come on, Roy. Push the right button. All right, here we go.
So this is...
Oh, this yes. Is the,
This is really... This is what it says from the MRI people, I guess the doctor.
Yeah.
There's an extensive tear of the supraspinatus tendon that affects nearly the entire tendon. Whoops. Affects nearly the... Whoops, hold on. Fat fingers here. Entire tendon appears to consist of a combination of high-grade partial thickness articular surface tearing and full-thickness tearing of the tendon. There's not to a 3.5 centimeter of medial tendon retraction. I think that's what they bought is the biggest.
Yeah, and you know what? That's really significant right there. That's not a simple, easy, owie boo-boo to heal.
Yeah, that's what they were telling me. And I'm just going to trust God that because I have full movement and
that's
my shoulder does work good, and I'm going to a very good doctor. He's a sports medicine, athletic football player doctor, that it's going to be good.
I think I vote that we put you on the defensive line of the Dallas Cowboys because they need all the help they can get. From what I can tell, they're not doing so well. Anyway, go ahead.
No, so, you know, your thoughts are the same thing. It's a pretty significant tear.
Well, from what you're describing to me, it really is. Now, yeah. I go in a slightly different direction?
You can.
What about all the other muscles in your shoulder? How about the chest muscles, the deltoids, the other remaining rotator cuff muscles, the serratus, the latissimus, rhomboids? What if we just work on getting all those stronger to kind of pick up the slack?
Really, you could do that, and I mean, I know you could do that.
Of course you can do that, but it would be a different concept. So, okay, I get it. I have a significant partial, you know, tearing of my supraspinatus tendon that's pretty extensive. Well, then the simple thing that you would do is, if there's a weakness in the body, you try to fortify it by strengthening the other tissues that are around that. It's amazing how much redundancy that God has created in the body. So if one thing goes down, you got another system that takes over. So, for example, if a woman had her ovaries removed, well, lo and behold, the adrenal glands, it just so happens they can make all the hormones that a woman needs if they're in good working order. So that'd be one example, and it may be the simple example. Or if somebody says, my doctor said that I need to get my gallbladder removed, and they get it removed, but their problems don't go away. Well, the common bile duct essentially kind of takes over and becomes your bile duct, I mean, your gallbladder for you. So,
wow.
But to make it, or if you, you know, have a diseased kidney, you might could remove it, and the other one, it can pick up the slack.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, well, I'm talking about if you take care of them. I'm not talking about if you trash them.
Right. Well, I did this 10 years ago, and he did have physical therapy for me, and it obviously did work, and everything went well.
So how is your life going to be better if you have the surgery?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, then there's your answer right there. If you can't, you're not clearly saying, hey, Dr. Morgan, I can't even move my arm right now. I can't lift it. You're not saying that. You're saying you have full range of motion. So if I ask you, how would your life be better if you had the surgery, what would that actually accomplish or do?
I think that periodic pain that I get, that big glitch that can throw me.
Oh, and that's what you meant by the glitch that you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a lockup or something. And it's not always. I'll reach for something, and it's not like that cup of coffee reach. I can do that, but there's a certain turn, and when I pull my arm back, it's like, whoa.
Now, what do you mean? You're reaching out in front of you or above you?
Correct.
Something? Okay.
Nope. It's usually in front of me. And it's not the coffee cup thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's some direction, and I can't really pinpoint it because I can't get half
the other thing is,
when it does.
You're 10 years removed from the injury.
Yes.
So, I'm not trying to make a joke by saying this, but when should a person start therapy? It's immediately, right?
Yes, sir.
And that's what you did?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And yes, immediately. And they wanted to put me on prehab therapy, surgery therapy, but they couldn't get me in. I was like, that's crazy.
Is that because the insurance wouldn't approve?
No. We had not enough spots. Not enough openings.
So they have that many people in pre-rehab right now doing therapy.
Exactly. Or rehab, you know, it's the whole clinic.
Well, why don't you just say, can I just stand outside the window and watch and maybe go through the motions? Can we do a Zoom meeting? No.
So if worse comes to worse, from your knowledge, if I don't do this surgery, and I kind of just do my physical therapy.
Well, in all fairness, I haven't examined you, so I don't really know the whole story like he did. But
later on would be rotator shoulder replacement. I'm guessing.
Man, oh my goodness. You do not want a shoulder replacement if you don't need one. Don't do that.
Okay.
Let me ask you this. What is this shoulder keeping you from doing? How are you not living your life to its fullest because of it?
I used to be, and it's not happening lately, but it used to be very painful. I would just lay there, you know, and hold it.
Is it better now because of all the rehab and therapy you've done?
It's better now. Yeah, I have to say it is better.
Okay. Did the doctor find anything else to talk about, that he had another concern on a different level? I mean, were your labs all good? Did everything look squeaky clean? Is your blood sugar exactly 80?
No.
Well, what's your blood sugar?
It's 112.
Well, bingo. You can't ever heal a tendon with it that high. That means your tendon is getting so much sticky sugar on it, it can't heal.
Oh.
I mean, you're literally, if you, I mean, I know I'm giving you loaded questions here. Which tendon is going to heal? Somebody with a blood sugar between 70 and 80, or somebody at 112? Well, it's not going to heal at 112. It's because...
Well, they just diagnosed me as insulin resistant.
Well, okay.
Which I don't know what that's...
Well, it means... I'll try to give you the simple... I'm sorry. So, once you found out you're insulin resistant, did you respond and say, what does that mean to me, and what should I do about it? Tell me what your plan is. Did that happen?
The doctor said, no, I'm changing doctors, because the doctor's plan was to immediately put me on metformin. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. So,
well, did he recommend any dietary changes?
No.
Okay.
Nothing. I said, I want to see a nutritionist. And that has
you, okay.
And
the doctor that told you nothing and prescribed a drug, you trust him to give you a nutritionist, right? That doesn't even make sense.
Well, I figured it would come through the hospital, you know.
You figured wrong. Anyway, all right, let's talk about this just for a second. I think this is a good point for everybody. There was a unique survey done recently of people that actually had diabetes. I know you don't, but these are people that actually have a diagnosis of diabetes, and that's probably going to be when your blood sugar is 126 instead of 112, okay? But ideal is probably going to be around 70, something like that. Maybe 80. I might go that high. Okay, so what they noticed is that the diabetics, they had 11 unique spikes of insulin over the course of the day. All right? So what that would look like is something like this right here. You wake up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee, you put your International House of Pancakes coffee creamer with hazelnut in it, and you add that to your coffee, it's got a little bit of sugar in it. Bam! You got a spike of insulin, because your insulin levels, it's not really good or bad, but it is good and very bad if there's too much of it. And that's what insulin resistance is. You got way too much sugar and way too much insulin, and it's causing excessive damage to all the soft tissues in your body, including your tendons, your ligaments, cartilage, muscles, that sort of thing. But they get 11 unique surges or spikes of insulin over the course of a day. And so how would we change that? Well, what if you just had two meals a day? That means all the food that you're ever going to eat that would cause an increase in blood sugar insulin, you only eat it two times a day. That means you just get two spikes of insulin. So like in your case, if you wanted to drink coffee, drink it with your breakfast. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because insulin resistance is people that snack a lot.
I don't snack a lot.
Now, what does that mean? What did you have to eat yesterday? What time did you wake up yesterday?
Late, 8:30.
Well, that's okay. You can't be perfect every day. What did you do when you wake up?
We're on vacation.
Okay, so you're on vacation. So what'd you do when you got up? What's the first thing you put in your mouth?
I had a cup of coffee.
And what time was that?
Probably 9.
Was there anything in the coffee?
There was some regular creamer. No fun creamer.
Okay.
Well, as I call it.
Well, but that would still be something that could cause a spike in insulin. So what'd you have after the coffee?
Mm-hmm.
So this is 9 o'clock. Did you have breakfast?
No. No, didn't have breakfast. I've been trying to do the two meals a day, fasting.
Okay.
So a normal thing at home is I have my coffee and I wait till about 11 to have something, sometimes 1, if I'm busy, to have something to eat.
Well, what did you eat yesterday for your first meal?
What did we eat, honey? Where did we go? Oh, we went to a seafood place and I had a seafood salad.
Okay, that sounds good. So there's two spikes of insulin right there. So just for an example, if you had supper, that would be 3 spikes of insulin. That's perfect. So you're telling me that's what you do day in, day out?
I try hard to
Okay,
do that.
So I don't understand the 112 then. Why do you have a blood sugar of 112?
I think it's my cortisol.
Okay, do you have a triglyceride number at all?
No, not handy.
Okay, no, well, but either way you look at it, you're pre-diabetic. That means your body's swimming in an ocean of inflammation. So if I wanted to find one way to make all the arteries and the tendons really stiff and prone to tearing, it's going to be what you're dealing with right now. So how are we going to get out of this?
I'm going to come see you.
But I'm not part of the hospital nutrition staff. I'm not a hospital nutritionist, though.
Well, I started taking Medi-Qol.
What is that?
Standard process. That is, I was told that was for like a metformin thing to help your sugar. And I have Gymnema, which I can't stand, but.
How dare you disrespect the delicious Gymnema plant? Everybody tells me the same thing. They can't stand it. Okay, so do you believe that taking supplements is more important than your lifestyle and your diet? Because it's not.
No.
Okay, so all I was getting at is all your body's pretty sugared up right now, and we want to reverse that. And supplements are great, but if you rely on a supplement to magically make your body go back to normal, it's probably not going to happen. So I don't really know anything about the inner workings of your body or your physiology. I'm just making guesses right here. But you want to give your body every possible chance to win and to heal and to get back to normal.
So it sounds like to me that I need to work on my glucose level, getting that down before I make a surgery decision to see if I'm feeling better or healing.
I tell you what, that's a pretty smart conclusion you just made right there. If you're in, so I know this sounds simple the way I'm saying it, but if I interpret what you're saying is you're going to say, this is exactly how I feel day in and day out. This is what's going on in my body when my blood sugar is 112. Let me see what my body tells me when I get it somewhere between 70 and 80. Then I'll find out, is my body in a much greater position to heal and repair?
So I know I haven't been in the 80s for a long, long time. But now, I have been in the, you know, 90s, 100s.
Now, there's a lot of stuff that you have not told me, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but do you have a sweet tooth?
No. Not really. Not really.
Okay, so where's the high sugar coming from then?
It has to be crunch. I have a handful of chips.
Okay, so now we know at least one theory on why it's this way. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
I'm not a sit down and eat a bag of chips. I'm not a eat a bowl of ice cream person.
Yeah.
I'm too busy. I think my tear that happened more is from grabbing sheep and being on the farm. You know, and
grabbing
that kind of
sheep.
Stuff. You know, as they run by.
As they run by.
I don't do that anymore.
Now, I think the offer is still legitimate that you play for the Cowboys because you're used to tackling sheep running at 40 miles an hour.
I have them in a small
enclosure. You might could tackle as good as those guys can. Okay, so at least you can very easily go to YouTube and you can type in shoulder mobility exercises. That's probably going to be a huge light bulb that goes off in your brain once you see those. You're going to say, oh, I never thought about those. And so maybe you should type in, and I'm sure you have already, what does a woman do that catches sheep for a living when she's got a torn rotator cuff? And you're probably going to have 15 videos.
I go to the doctor on Tuesday, and I think I'm going to talk to him about putting me in rehab again.
Okay.
I think he was concerned that, you know, if I do any more damage, it will be a shoulder replacement.
What do you think about putting yourself in rehab?
I can do, well, yeah, of course, because I can read, I can watch the videos and do it myself.
That's exactly where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I can hire a trainer.
Yeah.
Hire a trainer.
How much are you going to pay yourself?
Yeah, a lot.
Then get out your checkbook and write a check right now to the sheep lady and start doing your own. You know what? If you want to, you can very easily start with watching shoulder mobility exercises and exercises for people with their torn rotator cuffs. And you can start doing those today and then tomorrow. And then you can train some more. And you can train for a while and see if your body will actually do its job, which is to rise to the occasion and go fortify and strengthen and heal. But the rule of the day is, unless you put stress on a weakened tissue, you don't really give it any reason to fortify or to increase its thickness or its tensile strength. Now, I get it. Once there's a tear, you know, it's just not the same as, you know, it's 10 years removed.
Right.
But what if you could get to a good place where you had full range of motion and use of your arm and your shoulder, and every other part of your body improved too?
Mm-hmm.
What was that last thing?
I can lift up. I have full range. I can lift my arm up. I can even go behind my back.
Okay.
And grab my other hand.
So there's hope.
Full range.
There's hope that we can build upon that and improve it.
Where can I ask where the supraspinatus muscle is or tendon?
Yeah.
I've looked on things and I couldn't really find it.
Well, you have a bone that's kind of like shaped like a triangle called the scapula.
Okay, that's where I thought.
So the bone that's in the front of the rib cage is called the clavicle or the collarbone. It kind of props the scapula up to keep your shoulder from touching your rib cage. So the scapula is a very interesting irregular bone, but the very top of it, the top muscle of the scapula, that's called the supraspinatus because it's found just above the spine of the scapula. But the tendon itself runs right under this tunnel that's just where your collarbone and the acromion process form, but attaches to the humerus. And so when the supraspinatus contracts, you can lift your arm up and rotate it outward, or external rotation. But that also is easy. You could actually go to YouTube right now and say, please show me a demonstration of normal functioning of the supraspinatus. And you know what? At the end of the day, this is all you've got to do anyway. What are you going to do? You going to wait for the doctor to explain it to you? Well, I mean, they should have done that already, but if they don't... Can I pretend that I'm the orthopedic surgeon for a second?
Sure.
Okay. What's the guy's name? Dr. Smith? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You play along well. Thank you. Well, hello, young lady. I'm so glad to see you today for your visit. I got some good news for you. Your shoulder is not the tendon. It's a supraspinatus. You got a little tear, but this is an old injury from 10 years ago. But I've got hope for you. I mean, you're not like my other patients. Theirs is completely torn in half. They have no choice, but we're going to take a cordless drill, drill a hole in their bone, and tie the tendon off and staple it in place and hope for the best. But I've got a different plan for you because I believe that God designed the body to heal and repair itself if we give it a chance in the right circumstances. What are those circumstances, you ask, young lady? Well, let me tell you. We're going to start off with what are called shoulder mobility exercises. And let me write this down on this sheet of paper right here on my prescription form. It's YouTube. It's probably a website you've never heard of before, but because I'm a very sophisticated physician, I know all about YouTube. Sometimes I even goof off and watch YouTube shorts that don't matter to a hill of beans. But so if you start, Cindy, if you start doing these things, you can actually help create the environment to help strengthen your body. Now, the bottom line is this. If you don't do anything, you're not going to get better.
Right. No, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do it.
Okay, so let me ask you the second question or the second idea. If I asked you what food has God placed on the planet that has absolutely the highest amount of collagen of any food on the planet, and the reason I'm bringing this up is, what do you think tendons are made of? They're made of collagen.
Oh.
So maybe you should be eating this food that has the highest amount of collagen. You want to guess what that is?
I really have no clue, but eggs or meat or protein?
Yep, you're right. It's T-bone steaks.
I had a ribeye last night.
Ribeye? That's perfect. Yeah, that counts. That's good.
No. I had a prime rib.
That counts. Red meat has the highest amount of collagen, and that's why it's a little bit tougher to chew. It might be a little bit harder to digest for some people. But one thing's sure, if you keep losing the strength of your shoulder, you're giving no reason for your tendons to try to fortify and strengthen. I say, let's take what we've got, and let's have a go with this and see if we can't get you better.
I think so. I think I'm going to postpone this and go back to... See, I tore it 10 years ago, and it was a 2.5 or 2.2, and now it's 3.5. So it has progressed.
Yeah.
Okay, I just found the flat. When I put my arm back, you know how you used to do presses, and you would sit on a step and put your hands behind you on the step and lift yourself up. That just did a trigger.
That's because your shoulder's weak, and what you're doing is you're smashing the living daylights out of your rotator cuff tendon when you push like that. You're smashing it against the roof of that bony shelf.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't do that often. I imagine that.
No, but in all seriousness, you've got to take that blood sugar. It's got to get down to between 70 and 80 for this to heal.
Okay. I will do that.
Now, in order to prove my point, we're going to try to make it worse first. I need your blood sugar to go up to 285, and you're going to tell me if your shoulder is at least twice as bad, okay?
Oh, I'll tell you, it went to 155 once. I was in the grocery store, and I grabbed one of these health drinks. Holy cow, I had to walk out of the store. I thought, what the heck just happened to me? I couldn't think. I was shaking. I left the store, grocery bags of everything. I just had
Well, that's pretty serious.
It was horrible, but I don't know how to combat that. That's never happened again because I've never drank that stuff again. But
That's one way to combat it.
I just drank a whole lot of water to kind of diluted from my system. I figured it was the sugar in it. And it was. The stuff had, like, I don't know, 27 grams of sugar.
Well, that would be part of it, but it probably had a bunch of other chemicals that are just toxic. It probably had stuff like carrageenan and MSG in it, and it probably had other chemicals.
It was one of these naked drinks, you know, those little bottles.
Well, put some clothes on it.
When I read it, it's for it had for 4 servings, and I drank the whole bottle, not knowing, because it's a little bottle. You think, oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, well, I think you got
anyway,
plenty of things to work on.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day, ma'am.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open, 903-589-8507. This still is like a new number to me, so 903-589-8507, and I'll get you right in. What would it be like if you actually had a shoulder that worked right your entire life? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
We've all had COVID, and now my granddaughter's had a sinus infection, and the other has strep. What can we do to build up our immune system?
Well, there was a study, I got it right in front of me, that people take vitamin C, they heal the fastest from COVID, and they restore their immune system to good working order. So that's one option you got.
Okay.
Another herb that seems to be very, very precise when it comes to COVID and recovering is called black cumin seed. Have you ever heard of black cumin seed?
I think I'm taking some right now.
Well, my goodness, you're like 2 steps ahead of me at every turn.
Well, you give it to me, so.
Okay, so black cumin seed is one of those things that you can use right there. I think the most important thing is trying to avoid sugar. And then the other thing is just getting out in the sunshine. There are so many studies that show that if a person gets sick and they can't quite recover, that a little bit of sunbathing is one of the things that gets their immune system back into good working order.
Oh, yeah, I believe in that. I believe that. And I wrote down sugar before I even called you because I knew that's what you were going to say.
Well, do you know what the number one predictor is of an infection that just never really goes away? It lingers forever. It's consumption of sugar. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I don't complain ever if somebody says, can I get my sugar from a bowl of strawberries or blueberries or, you know, raspberries or cherries? Never. That's never a problem.
Right.
But you got to make it easy for your body to heal. So I say a little bit of rebuilding's in order here. But it's hard to beat vitamin C.
Well, do they have it in a form that a one-year-old baby could take? Or just
They do. They have those little bitty, they look like a homeopathic tablet, which means they crumble in the mouth and form a paste like real fast. So it's very easy. And they also have some liquid vitamin C that's glycerin based. And you could just squeeze it in there like you would squeeze medicine into a calf's mouth. I didn't call the baby a cow, by the way. I was just giving an example.
Right. Because, you know, all the doctors do is throw antibiotics, 10 days worth of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Antibiotics do save lives. I get that.
Right.
But the problem is every ounce of food that we eat is just loaded with antibiotics to begin with.
Right. And, you know, this is coming from school. You know, you got a kid in school, they're just bringing sickness home to the old woman that lives in the house. So, or the baby.
So, you're trying to be a great grandmother, take care of the kids, watch after them, and all they do is bring germs in the house, right?
Right. We're fixing to start homeschooling teachers.
Well, what you're going to do is you're going to have them take their clothes off, and we're going to hose them down and make them sunbathe before they come in the house.
Right. Well, we spray everything with Lysol, but I guess after they come in the house, it's done too late.
Well, I tell you what, that's all we used in the microbiology lab when I was in school. Every time we'd have to clean this and clean that. Just everything was Lysol. But you know what? Lysol doesn't hold a candle to white vinegar. It just doesn't. It can't. White vinegar is absolutely the greatest antiseptic of all time. There's nothing better. If you told me there's a dirty doorknob leading to the inside of an elementary school, let me bring my bottle with some white vinegar in it. I'll take care of that real quick for everybody.
Oh, wow.
But you realize, to some people, vinegar doesn't smell pleasant, so they might look at it funny. But, for example, if you had a countertop where, let's just say, raw meat was on it, or, you know, your grandson brought some crawdads and a dead fish and laid them on there, well, how are you going to clean that? White distilled vinegar. I don't know of any germ, whether it's a virus, a bacteria, a fungus, a parasite, that can survive the sterilizing ability of white vinegar. There's nothing.
Well, I'm fixing to put some in the spray bottle.
Good girl. Has anybody ever told you, don't eat those pickles, they've got vinegar in them? Steer clear of those.
It doesn't bother me. I kind of like the smell of it. I like the taste of apple cider.
Hey, has anybody ever had like a bacterial infection from eating pickles or a virus? I don't think so. They got vinegar in them. I can't remember who it was, but there's a lady called me on the phone. She had like horrible, horrible laryngitis. She couldn't even talk. And she's going, what do I do? And I'm going, oh, this poor woman, she's miserable. I said, would you consider gargling with half water and half apple cider vinegar and just see what happened? The next day she called me. You're not going to believe this. My voice is perfectly fine, Dr. Morgan.
Oh, wow.
Now, that was apple cider vinegar. What I was telling you, if you wanted to spray down the doorknobs, the faucets, just everywhere that a little hand could touch, refrigerator door handle, that's white vinegar right there. You could do half water, half vinegar. That usually does the job.
Okay, I appreciate this very much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're welcome. Look it up for yourself if you're curious.
Okay, thank you
so much.
All right,
thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, they have all these pre-made solutions like Lysol. You know, bleach is potent, too. But I remember all those. There was a study I read years ago where they looked at all these vegetable washes that you would, like, soak your vegetables in or your fruit, or in some cases, maybe even meat. Just to make sure they don't have any toxic, you know, salmonella or E. coli or something like that. There was nothing in the study that could even remotely compare with the power of white vinegar. So, yeah, you could spend $17.95 on a spray bottle with a fancy label that says, spray this on your vegetables to wash them clean. There's no way it could compare with white vinegar. It's impossible. See, the bottom line is, there's so many things that have been around for literally thousands of years, and they're widely acceptable and available, and they're cheap. If you bought a huge 1 gallon, 2 gallon jug of white vinegar, I mean, really, how much is that going to cost? Is that like maybe $3 now? Even with massive, you know, inflation, the cost of vinegar is skyrocketing, but it's still affordable, and it has so many uses. But one of them is just cleansing a countertop or a sink or a bathroom or a shower. You just think of any way you want to apply it. But vinegar is amazing in its ability to kill toxic bacteria and viruses. Does that make sense? So you ought to consider that. Even if all you did today, if you put it on your list, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to buy one of those utility, I don't know if they're called Rubbermaid, that's what I'm thinking of, but just a spray bottle, and you put half white vinegar and half water in it. And you know for a fact that a sick person just came and coughed all over your front door. I know it doesn't really happen quite like that. But haven't you ever been sitting in church and the person behind you is coughing? And you're thinking, why did they come to church? They should be sparing us from their influenza and their pneumonia germs. Anyway, consider white vinegar. This is Dr. Roy Morgan. This program is Health Essentials. Lord willing, I will be back next Saturday morning.